the advertising industry, that last great social science, currently finds itself in a flux. This business, one that many in the ad game call a judicious mix of flattery and threats, faces just as many uncertainties as any other sector of the economy, with changing consumer attitudes and an increasingly fragmented media landscape. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we chat with Sam Mears of Mears Advertising about the mad world of an ad man. We'll talk about shoehorns, airplane epiphanies, and his own blog, which is appropriately titled, wait for it, Smoke and Mirrors. That plus a local historian and activist chimes in about ways to improve Prospect Avenue and rejuvenate its storied past. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. John O'Toole, author of the book, The Trouble with Advertising, once said, when executing advertising, it's best to think of yourself as an uninvited guest in the living room of a prospect who has the magical power to make you disappear instantly. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today knows a lot about the triumph and trouble with advertising. Join us now is Sam Mears, winner of the KC Business Magazine's Company of the Year. You can find his story on newsstands now, and he joins us now in the KCUR studios. Welcome to the show, Sam Mears.
Good morning, Jabalani. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, how long have you been in advertising?
Since I was 18, actually.
Since you were 18. How did it start?
I was working at Dairy Queen in my hometown in southern Illinois, and got a chance to do the news broadcast for my high school and went and auditioned at the radio station. And started working there doing that, and then got hired as a DJ on nights. And then the station manager said, you know, I bet you can sell. And so he put me on the street, and I started selling radio advertising and ended up outselling all of the full-time radio reps. And so at age 18, I was doing radio sales on air at night, radio sales during the day, and then decided to go ahead and get a degree in advertising when I went to college, and then started straight out of school in advertising in Indianapolis and ended up in Kansas City.
Before you continue, is what you just told us a backstory that you made up for advertising purposes in your bio,
or
is
it an
actual
true
story?
WVLN, WSEI, FM.
Right, right. And you have the chops. You are a former DJ.
I am a former. I had to learn how to, like, actually not – I had to lose that Southern Illinois draw. You know, when I still have a little bit of it, but yeah, I had to lose that. It's a great backstory. I wish I didn't make it up. I could probably make more of it up.
But you could. You probably could. What did you find out was the disparity between what we call in the business church and state, being behind the mic versus selling against?
You know,
what is on the mic.
That's that was one of the things that I obviously at age 18 I didn't understand, but. Going through school, you come to understand it very quickly, especially when you're, you know, working in the media side. And today, I mean, there are, for the most part, publications, broadcast companies completely respect that, especially at the higher level. Some of the lower levels, they don't. There's always pay for play. But no, at the higher levels, there's a definite separation of advertising and editorial, and there should be. There should never be that crossover. That's just, in my mind, completely unethical.
So why did you choose the state side or the dark side, as they say?
Yeah. Oh, tough question. The completely candid answer behind that is I went to my advisor my sophomore year in college, and I said, okay, so we have radio, TV, editorial, or advertising tracks. Which should I follow? And he goes, well, you know, you've obviously experienced both the advertising and the radio, TV side.
Did he tell you that on all of the former, you'll probably be sending your kids to a state college?
Yes. And that's really kind of what it came down to. I asked him, I said, well, Dr. Evans, I said, which is going to pay the best? And he goes, you cannot make your decision that way.
Right.
I said, but which does pay the best? I said, because I love radio. And I said, I also love advertising. And his comment was, well, advertising probably will. And I said, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I've always had this dream of going back on the air, you know, because it is just – it's where my roots are.
You're fulfilling your dream right
well,
now.
Well, I am. Yeah, this is kind of fun, except I'd rather be in your chair and doing this
right.
every day.
Right.
But then you'd have to be in my chair and, you know. But it's – you can be on both sides of the – you can, as long as you keep that definite line in the sand and don't cross it.
So When did advertising become a passion? You said initially, you said, okay, which one pays more? I can do this well. When did it become a passion?
Advertising sales became a passion, you know, when I was in college, when I understood that I could actually sell radio airtime. And if you can sell radio airtime, you can sell pretty much anything. And
water to a well.
Anything, yes. Exactly. I think it became a passion as soon as I graduated and I began working in an agency and understanding there's this mystical part of when you take an idea and you give it to the creative team, and it's kind of like how cows turn grass into milk. No one really understands how that works, but all at once it's there.
It happens somewhere in the intestine tract.
It's somewhere. Actually, I also have an agriculture degree, so I can probably tell you where the where it becomes milk. But
and then Dairy Queen, so that kind of creates that's right. Awesome symmetry.
That's right. I was at Dairy Queen, too, for 2 years. So, but that's where I found the passion, is when I can see these ideas come to life, and ideas that are personally relevant to the people we're trying to talk to. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, there are a lot of bad advertising out there, far more bad than great advertising. And so it's a true craft, as we were talking earlier. It's a true craft to do extraordinary advertising.
So how has the advertising game changed? You've been in it since you were 18. How has it changed?
Well, there are the obvious changes. You know, desktop publishing did not exist. Computers did not exist. I was actually fortunate. I was working on a retail computer company in Indianapolis when the Macintosh was introduced in 84. And so I got to see the Mac before it was actually introduced, and actually did one of my first resumes to get to Kansas City on the Mac before it was even introduced. So it's changed dramatically. The biggest change, I think, is for clients trying to keep up with the change. And it's hard for us. And you know, when we reinvented ourselves in 2008 and became more of a digital marketing and advertising agency than just a traditional brand agency, it was really obvious that this was where it was going. But it's so challenging for everyone on this side of the business to keep up with all the digital changes. It's there's something new almost every hour.
You rebranded in 2008. Mm-hmm. What is it like to be in an industry that is in such a flux with the changes in media platforms coupled with the down economy? And I think that's a question that myself and a lot of colleagues of myself and peers are asking, right, in our profession, which, you know, the two are kind of have a symbiotic relationship.
It's like being in a vice at times, and it's like jumping out of a plane at other times. Constraints foster creativity. Okay, so the tighter the box, the more creative we have to become at solutions. And I think Steve Jobs talked about this in his biography, that there really are no new ideas, but there are people who are able to connect dots between existing ideas and concepts and create something new. I think that's what we do on a regular basis. You know, it's not that we're inventing something that has never existed. We're connecting dots between things that already exist. That's the hard part. And it does require it requires you to have a really general working knowledge of many, many things, and the ability to pull back and look at those strategically, but also what's the right word? A little bit in the abstract and say, what if we did this? And sometimes, you know, we'll be in a meeting and somebody will ask the question why, and then somebody will say, well, why not? And then we go forward.
What's the more important question, why or why not?
I would say why not. You know, it's,
and why?
Well, there's a great TED Talk that Simon Sinek did that talks about the leadership traits of great leaders. And one of his questions is that you should always start with why. And he uses Apple for an example. And one of the things Apple always stands for is that you're always challenging the status quo. They're always challenging the status quo. So it's when you start with why, then it's people buy because you started with why, because they believe in your company, not so much that they need another mattress or need a new set of tires. It's why do you do that? why do I fly Southwest? You know, why do I buy Apple? You know, there are plenty of other ways to have computing and plenty of other airlines, but I believe in what those companies stand for, and I think that's why people buy.
Where does the why not come in?
The why not really comes in more when you're questioning status quo. You know, if it's so easy, people really don't like change. And so I think you have to ask why not sometimes to get people to change a paradigm. There's one of those big consultant words. But I don't know any other word. If you're going to change a mindset about how someone is thinking about an idea or a concept, you almost have to ask why not. Why would we not do this? The other thing about it, Jabalani, is, you know, companies have to be well positioned, and to be positioned in the mind of a consumer, you have to position against something. And so asking why not do it, you know, oftentimes will give a client or a company the courage to go, I don't know, I've never thought why we should not do it. I've only asked why we should do it.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're with Sam Mears, winner of the KC Business Magazine's Company of the Year. You can find his story in more detail in the Top Companies issue on Newsstands Now, and he's in KCUR studios with us. Sam, you mentioned that the current advertising industry and the media flux that we find ourselves into, the brave new world, so to speak,
right,
is at times like a vice, very constricting. And at times you find yourself jumping out of a plane,
right,
the sort of improvisational nature. To that point, one of the things that sticks out about your business and one of the things that makes your story so incredible is that you actually recently had to turn around your business from the point of extinction.
Yeah, I think we found ourselves in a vice. We had a fairly large client that had called us and said, we're sorry, we're out of money, and I think they owed us $168,000.
Wow.
And they said, we're going to pay you, but we just don't know when. And so
take us back to that day.
Yeah.
Tell us the story. Well, tell us about that call and everything that went through
your mind. The call happened in September of 2007, and the client had been just paying right along really nicely, no worries whatsoever. Then the call came that said, you know, our board has told us we have to quit spending. You know, and that by itself is bad.
Right.
Any day that a client, you know, and we're a small company, obviously, and any day a client says, we're not going to be able to pay you for a while, and the while took about 9 months before we saw any money. And then they did pay it, but that was in May and June of 2008, so that was quite some time. So by February of 2008, we'd been through 4 or 5 months of not being paid by that client, which hurt cash flow. And we had borrowed our max, which was $250,000 on our line of credit. And we had had 2 negative months. And so we were almost $500,000 in debt by February of 2008. That was a very dark day. And that was one of those days where you, you just sit back and you're like, okay, this is bad. You know, and we ended up laying off 2 people then, and we'd had a couple other people just from attrition leave earlier in the year. And it was one of those times it's like, okay, you've got 3 choices, close it, sell it, or reinvent it. And the reinvention, I'd like to say it was a clear idea to reinvent. But what we realized was we do have clients, we do have paying clients, and we had one client that we just landed that shortly after we landed them, they said, you know, our end of year budget's coming up. Would you mind if we prepaid you for all the work you're going to do in the next year?
Of course not.
And with a straight face, I said, no, I think that would be fine. And so they did. And that helped from a cash flow perspective. And then a couple of other things transpired, including the texting program for Blue KC, that took a couple years to ramp up, but we saw the potential in it. And there were things about that we said, you know, it was not a conscious, we're going to reinvent, but we knew that we couldn't be afraid to try. I think that was the key.
Tell us about all the elements that went into the rebranding in 2008 of Mears Advertising.
I think it was a mindset change more than anything. And it was a conscious effort to tell the story a little bit differently, to talk about measurement, to talk about you know, the importance of thinking differently, the importance of not being afraid to take a hard right turn. You know, the brand continues to evolve. You know, we were just talking about this morning before I came to the studio, and that I think that's part of the brand now is a constant evolution. You know, there's nothing that the business is moving too quickly, Jabalani, for it to forever. For you can always take a snapshot of it, but you can't ever put a stake in the ground and say this is, you know, what it's going to be tomorrow, because it's evolving, and that I think that's part of our brand.
Part of your rebranding exercise was making yourself into a digital marketing company. What does that entail, and how do you roll that service out?
Digital, a lot of advertising agencies have digital departments or interactive departments. We think, yeah, exactly, interactive.
I just did air quotes.
Yeah, he did air quotes.
Yeah, we just did air
Sorry,
quotes.
Sorry, this isn't TV.
Right.
But the fact of it is, digital is a mindset, and I think a lot of agencies struggle with that because if the CEO doesn't get it, the agency's not going to get it. You know, and I look at our friends at VML, you know, and Matt Anthony and John Cook, you know, obviously understand digital, and it's a mindset, and that's their business. But there are a lot of agencies around the country that are struggling to make that transition because they've always been a traditional shop. They do print, they do TV, they do radio, they do outdoor, they do online, they do search. But if it's not a mindset, then there's probably somebody within that organization trying to push it up, but they're not going to get to the top if the CEO doesn't get it.
How does the digital component change the game?
Speed and measurability.
Talk about measurability.
Yeah, we can measure almost anything now. It's really rather fascinating. It all comes down to how much money is the company willing to spend to measure. But we know where people are. We know what they're doing. We know what they're doing online. We know their behavioral traits. We know their demographics. We know pretty much everything that we need to know to target most effectively.
Are we still talking about advertising, or yeah, are you CIA?
No, well, it's we talk about this, that there's this fine line between creepy and spooky.
Right.
Okay. And we always we don't mind the spooky part, you know. So when you go visit, you know, let's say you visit REI or another, you know, I can say that because they're not in this market yet. But you go visit REI and all at once their website, and you come back 2 days later and you're on CNN or some other program. Or some other page on the web, and all at once you start seeing REI ads, you know, specifically for the product you looked at, you know, on the REI website. That's retargeting. That's very easy for us to do because we've placed a cookie on your computer for 30 days, and we'll see if you buy. There are things we do with email marketing, you know, that are similar. I mean, it's we don't do spam, but, you know, if you've opted in, you know, for communication from one of our clients, you know, you'll get very relevant content. That's the whole key, is give you as relevant content as possible.
So let me get this straight. Being spooky as an advertiser sort of creates an aura of mystery, a sort of benign white sheet ghost, kind of like Casper, that's kind of cute, has an enigma to it, and right, isn't too intrusive. Creepy is a trench coat.
Creepy's bad.
Creepy's bad.
Creepy's bad. Creepy is when you cross a line. And I think spooky is one of those things where people will look at their web, their browser, and they'll go, "Huh, how'd they know I wanted to buy, you know, new skis from REI?"
That's spooky, like jazz hand spooky.
Exactly.
Not like, "Oh my God, no, let me check out my window."
No, that's creepy. You know, and so we try to stay away from creepy. And actually, this conversation comes up quite a bit because, you know, it's not hard to go over to the creepy side of digital marketing. Because we know where it is, but you have to respect, you know, those lines with your customer, and you have those conversations with clients. It's like, all right, how far do we take? No, we can't go there. That's the creepy part.
How does the greater transparency of measurability make your job harder and easier?
It's harder because it's so much more expensive to do it, and when you can, we, the we are very sure today, and a lot of digital companies and digital marketing companies are, that if you can dream it, we can build it. It's other than, you know, transporting mammals, you know, through the air, I don't think we can do that. But if you can dream up an idea, a strategy, we can pretty much build it. The challenge is the expense. And the challenge is proving it to a company, to a client, in some small way so that they can go to their C-suite or to their board of directors and go, yeah, we need to spend X in order to do this, but here's how it's going to drive the business.
So you don't, just for the record, transport mammals through the air?
We do not transport mammals through the air.
Not even like?
No, not even small ones.
A circus sort of deal?
Nope.
Out of a cannon?
Nor arachnids or any
other
type of animal.
That's where you draw the line.
Exactly.
No living, breathing things through the air.
If it's digital, we can build it. Yes.
But if it's a mammal,
no, we don't
stay
transport
on the
mammals, right.
Stay on the ground. Speaking of being on the ground, so to speak, you're able to espouse some of your philosophies and musings through your blog.
Yep. Yeah. And
please tell us what your blog is called.
You said it earlier this morning with a grin. Smoke and Mirrors.
Smoke and Mirrors, as in Mirrors Advertising.
It has a slight double entendre.
Yes. A very excellent play on words, by the way. Why did you name it that? I mean, it's obvious. It's irresistible.
Yeah. It
How has that helped empower you, though, in your message?
A couple ways. What's interesting about that is when we were – I started the blog in 2005, I think, and it really picked up steam as we were in the process of reinventing. And so the I was posting 2 or 3 times a week. Now I'm lucky to post 2 or 3 times a month. So the blog has helped get a lot of things out of my system so that we could, all the thoughts and how we're being strategic with our clients. It's a great starting point.
Speaking of starting points, something recently happened on a Southwest flight to Newark.
Yes.
It was in your blog post. What happened and what epiphany came to you as a result?
You know, the thing that happened was one of my associates and I were flying to Newark, and as a gentleman was putting his backpack above a aluminum water bottle, fell out and whacked me in the head, knocked my glasses off, and it was just one of those, you know, I can't exactly say the expletive that I said on the plane, but the flight attendant was right there, took care of it, and said, you know, is there anything I can get you? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. And I'm like, wait, yes, how about free drinks? And so she brought free drinks to my associate and I, and then also a full plastic bag full of Southwest peanuts. And the thing that it reminded me of is this is why I love Southwest, and this is why you love certain companies, because they do the unexpected. They you know, if that were another airline, I doubt that they would have even noticed. But Southwest took care of it, and that's what makes companies great, is how do they treat customers outside of the ordinary, you know, when they've been taught to do that. And so that's what that blog post was about.
And it took a whack on the head for you to bring that epiphany to fruition, so to speak, on it's all based on how you treat customers.
Right, right. You know, you can write a blog post about almost anything.
Yeah, you
know, Kevin Fullerton, who former president of the AAF here in Kansas City, said, he goes, Mirrors, he goes, I think if I gave you a word like shoehorn, you could write a blog post about it. I'm like, I have no doubt. You know,
Okay. Shoehorn. That concept's on the table.
Yeah, it's very what do you shoehorn.
Yeah,
okay,
go ahead.
So it's like, you know, a shoehorn's designed to like put, you know, your foot into a shoe. Well, some concepts are like that. You know, you have to kind of pry them in a little bit until everybody sees what the true opportunity is.
And what's an example of that in today's world?
Oh, my. An example of a shoehorn idea. You know, what's interesting is,
if you give a TED Talk on shoehorns,
I could do
I
it.
Want my name mentioned. just FYI.
The whole idea of using texting to sell health insurance, I think, would have been a shoehorn idea, because it was total by accident how that idea came about. And as we've talked about, using different media, using digital media like mobile to help sell a new idea, I mean, it takes some talking, because you've got to convince several people at several layers, and they're like, really? Really? That works? Yes. Try it. And so I think those are examples of a shoehorn idea. I've never coined that before. We may use that.
You got to force it in by the heel or by the toe, either way.
One or the other.
And then try on the shoes and see how they fit as you walk around.
Right.
I just gave you your whole
post. I like
it.
I want to do it.
Right there. Smoke and Mirrors.
I'll write it on the plane this afternoon.
Smoke and Mirrors. Speaking of one of your other blog topics, and speaking of mobile, you just talked about mobile and sending text messages to sell healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
First, talk about that idea, text messages to sell healthcare, and then we'll get into the
discussion. It came about in the summer of 08. Ron Rowe, our client at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City, had called to see if we could dust off some old TV spots and run them out at Sandstone. And we're like, Ron, you know, we can, and we can put the 800 number in it, but 20-year-olds are not going to call a toll-free number, even at a break in the concerts. It was a battle of bands. And I'm like, he goes, well, what will they do? I'm like, well, they'll probably text. He goes, how's that work? I'm like, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. And so we did. And we piloted it in the fall of 08, and it's been going strong now for 4 years. And it's really relatively simple. It's just that no one had ever thought of it before.
One of your blog topics was avoiding bloodshed in the mobile space. How do you keep from spilling blood by getting into the growing mobile space?
Test. You've got to test. And, you know, a lot of companies ask about that. And mobile is a broad term. You know, it can be apps. It can be mobile websites. I think you have to start with, you know, what's the strategy? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? A lot of companies will come and say, you know, we need to be in the mobile space. We're like, well, you start with why, you know, and say, what are you trying to accomplish? Because mobile's different. Mobile's not a website. You know, a lot of times if a company wants a mobile presence, they need to start on the mobile side before they go to their website and then, you know, simplify their website along the way. So there is blood there, and it can be a money pit if you don't start with the right strategy.
Okay, I have to ask this question. You're in the ad business, Mad Men.
Yeah.
How much fact? How much fiction?
For the early '60s, that was pretty much fact. I mean, I obviously wasn't there. I didn't start in the actual advertising world till '82, but I had lots of people who were there in the '60s, and those stories are pretty much true.
The cussing, the smoking, the drinking, the schmoozing.
Yes, the womanizing. Every part of that, I think, was true. And even when I started, you know, there were one of the things that Matthew Weiner does in that show is the ashtrays are always full of cigarette butts, and that's how it was. And you walked into any office, and the place reeked of cigarette smoke. And it's hard to remember that today. It's kind of like talking about having an unlisted number, you know, on your phone. It's like no one does that anymore. But that's how it was.
How does cultural phenomenon such as that about a particular industry shape the way you do business or shape the evolution of it, the perceptions of it behind the scene?
You know, I think it's always good to look back at that. I wrote a post, I don't remember when, in my blog, but it was something about, you know, paying homage to the people who went before us, you know, in this industry. You know, this is a really tough kind of business. You know, it's cutthroat. It's very competitive. And I think you look back at Mad Men, for example, and there have been a number of advertising shows over the years from Bewitched on. And you say, you know, those really did capture a moment in time. And we do have to pay homage to that. And we do have to, you know, acknowledge what came before us and the extraordinary changes. But many of the parameters that were set back then are still in place today. Many of the processes and procedures are still in place today.
To that end, we talked about the past and we talked about you recovering, sort of anticipating the future on the fly and rebranding in 2008, coming forward to where you're now the winner of the KC Business Magazine's Company of the Year. Where do you see advertising shifting to? Who, in your estimation, will be in a position to seize an uptick in market share? Put more succinctly, where media is concerned and media platforms, who do you see as the winners and the losers?
The ones that combine traditional media with digital media and find ways to effectively collaborate with creative. You know, a lot of companies say, well, you know, we need a good media buying company. No, you need a good agency that understands how to put media and creative together. They're not disparate silos. It's just like you can't have a digital department. It's a digital mindset. You can't have, you know, traditional media and digital media be separate mindsets or separate silos. They have to be all in one, and they have to be intimately tied to creative. You can't do it any other way. Those are going to be the winners. And companies that identify agencies, you know, and there's also this ongoing debate of, well, you know, what's an agency today? But those who identify agencies that can do that are going to be the ones that win and are not afraid to pay them to go out and experiment.
Our guest is Sam Mears, winner of the Casey Business Magazine's Company of the Year. He runs Mears Advertising. You can find his story on newsstands now. And, of course, he joined us here today on Central Standard. We're talking about shoehorns and blood and what's spooky and what's creepy, the mad world of advertising, according to Sam Mears. Thank you for dropping by Central Standard today, Sam Mears.
Jabalani, thank you. Appreciate it.